Blog Talk Radio.
It up with a little Lou Gramm, Midnight Blue, if some of you guys can remember that. This is the show that sweeps Tuesdays and starts it out big. The Gross Misconduct Podcast, hosted by a brother, a mentor, and a friend, former Major League Baseball pitcher Kip Gross. He's in Newport. Yours truly, Mark Mancini, producing, playing a little co-host with him in the San Fernando Valley. We go 30. If you happen to miss it, catch the archive version, blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports, podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. So without further ado, laying the red carpet down, put the podium in its place, and hand off the mic. How are you, Kip? How can people get a hold of you? And, man, there is a lot to talk about today, my friend.
Yes, there is. Yeah, I'm doing really good at Newport right now, and it's been a good week in baseball watching the fights and everything going on and the races. So, yeah, it's good stuff right now throughout baseball. Some good races going, but yeah, the fights have been pretty crazy this week.
Well, let's talk about the fights. Because I've always talked with Warren Brewster about these things. I've talked about Billy North with it. We've seen these, and you know, in a course of 162 games, you're going to have peaks and valleys. You're going to have ups and downs. You're going to trust your ability to a certain extent. We'll get into that. But the fights usually start pretty much the dog days of summer. We get them teams, you know, trying to get into the pennant race. Other teams that are out of it. The slides might be a little harder, you know, the takes, you know, could be a little harder too. I mean, give us a little example of what it takes, you know, into these things, because I don't know, when everybody gets together and the two guys are going at it, is it exchanging dinner reservations in somebody's city or something?
Well, you know, it's kind of a funny deal when a fight does break out. I mean, this thing with Anderson has been brewing for a long time with a lot of players. I mean, he's not a well-liked guy. He's always yapping at the other team. He's always saying stuff. And, you know, then he gave the old Jackie Robinson thing, saying that, you know, he's the new Jackie Robinson of the league, and he's going to make things his way and whatever. And, you know, players just don't like it, and it gets old. And I'm pretty sure when he slid in there to second base, he had already been jawing before, I guess. Anderson had been saying something to their team. So when he slid in there, he put a hard tag on him, and that's what he said earlier in the game. He said, you know, you're putting tags down that shouldn't be put down as hard as they are. And he put the tag on him, and he came up and let him know right away, there you go again. You put on the hard tag, and then, you know, he threw down his glove, and I think he was actually maybe one of his teammates to get in between him, but he got the worst of it with the punch to the left jaw, and he went down and he went night night, and I think probably about 95% of all baseball was actually happy it happened because of all the things he's been doing over the years, and I don't know if you saw the next day, but Anderson didn't start, when he came, who's the guy that hit? I just lost my head.
Ramirez.
When Ramirez came up to bat the next day on Sunday, the stadium gave him a standing ovation for about 30 seconds. It was really, really cool to see. Ramirez, you know, he's only like 5'7" or something like that, 5'8".
Yeah.
And you know, he packed a good little body there and punch. So it was good to see. I think it was good for baseball, and it just goes to show you, no matter who you are, what you are, you know, you've got to keep it on the quiet side a lot of times and not chirp at the other teams so much. You know, there's talk going on once in a while, but the less you talk to the other team, the better off you're going to be. But these fights, like that one there, it was good for baseball, in my opinion. It was.
Well, you bring up an interesting point. I've always said, if you don't want the camera attention, then just keep moving. And we saw this with Donaldson and Anderson, I believe, last year. And Donaldson, I guess, got suspended for it, and they jabbered back and forth. Now we got Anderson, played, I believe, on the USA team, and I thought, okay, you know, maybe the guy's, trying to resurrect himself and get better. But, you know, I've always said this, Kip, it takes a long time to get up a mountain. You don't want to roll off it overnight. And after that whole fight, I don't know if you saw it, but the White Sox general manager, it looked like the manager on the White Sox as well, they were on different opinions. It seems like it's a culture situation in that locker room. And, you know, when you look at something like that and it festers and it has, you know, I always look at the New England Patriots when Brady was there and Belichick and all those guys. They keep those problems inside so it won't filter out. I think when it filters out, that's when the problems become to the surface. And when a GM is talking about, you know, well, this is what it is, and, the manager might be saying something else, then it becomes a problem there, and then it swirls around like a cancer in a clubhouse. So I don't know how you get to the bottom of it. I think what I would do is basically get a communication thing going and let everybody air it out. You've been in a lot of locker rooms. You've seen these things. And it's kind of one of those things. Let's try to keep it in-house because we won't want to get it out there, because then the media is going to take it and run with it every day of the week.
Oh, you know, there's no doubt what you're saying right there. You've got to keep everything in-house. And Belichick out there in New England, he's a master at it. And you never, ever hear anything come out of that locker room. And if you do, somebody's going to get released. And that's just how they play the game. And that's how baseball should be too. But, you know, if I'm a teammate of his right now, Anderson, I'm not even want to see a reporter, because I'm sure they're getting asked tons and tons of questions about what's going on, and you shouldn't have to speak up for your other teammates. And so I'm sure a lot of guys are kind of avoiding anything and probably just saying, hey guys, I got nothing to do with this. And I'm sure they've had a team meeting already, or maybe even, yeah, probably a team meeting, maybe even a players only meeting because of it. But I don't know how you can sit there and support your teammate. I am the biggest proponent of supporting your teammate all the time. But when he's doing what he's done, gets in this fight like that, it was a total embarrassment for the entire team and organization. So what do you do as a player? Do you talk to the media about him, or do you just say, hey, I'm out of this. You're going to have to talk to him yourself. And I'm sure the manager and management have had to answer tons of questions already. I think he's still got a one-year deal left after this year. I honestly believe they're going to release him after the season, just because you just don't need that, especially with his numbers this year. He's been a terrible, terrible hitter as far as Major League Baseball goes. I think he's got one home run all year. And right. It's just one of those things where, do you need that cancer in your clubhouse? No, you do not. Is he worth the cancer? Is he a Barry Bonds? No, he's not. So, when you get to a player of that caliber, you know, he's been really good, no question. But when you keep talking like that, people want to beat you even worse.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I think that's what's happening to him now in this year, because I don't know what he's hitting. It's really low average, and also one home run, and you know he's just not getting the job done. So I got a feeling he's going to probably be looking for a new job next year.
Well, and not only that, when the manager and the GM ain't even on the same page, and they're differentiating what is, being done, then the clubhouse is kind of thinking to themselves, well, if those guys aren't on the same page, so I think it has to, you got to get to the root of the problem, and you got to find out, okay, who wants to be here, who doesn't want to be here, and if somebody doesn't want to be there, then you work your way to, get them out of the city, if that's the case, because you got 25 guys that are striving and pulling the rope in one direction. You don't want a few guys pulling it in another direction because you're not going to go nowhere. I've always looked at talent and character. Give me the character guys more so than the talented guys, because the talent guys will work in with that. But if you got more of the talent and there's no character, then I think it's going the other way. Am I on to something?
I'm right with you. I'm 100% with you. I was just talking to my good buddy Jeff Grotewald today about a little bit about this, you know, and it's this whole thing in baseball right now is getting out of hand with how the celebrations after home runs are, and you know, putting on gear after a home run in the dugout and all that stuff, and it's where is the game going? So the character, what you're saying is some of these guys, you watch them, and they really don't want to even do it. You can tell, you know, when they walk in that dugout, they don't want to put the headgear on and the dress or the coat or whatever they're all putting on. It's like, really, this isn't me. And so you're right about the character. The guys with character are the ones that you want on your team, because you know they're going to go out and play hard for you day in and day out for 162 games. And it's a long-ass season. And this is the time of year. This is when I called it early in the season, if you remember. I was saying about the new rules they implemented. Things are going to start happening now because people are getting dog tired. They're running out of gas and ammunition to play the game, and so they're trying to find that little extra. And the tempers flare up. And when you got a guy that doesn't have character like this Anderson guy, you know, he's gonna start wearing some fastballs in the ribs. He's just going to, because guys just don't want to put up with what he's doing to their game anymore. And so once one does it, it's going to happen for the next guy. But, yeah, the character thing is huge. I'll take that guy over the talent any day of the week, because character guys learn how to play the game. You don't need to have five stars or five, you know, your five-tool player to be a good baseball player. You just need to have one or two good ones and learn the game. And you can play the game at the highest level. So character is way up there on the list.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Yeah, I'm sitting there watching Sunday Night Baseball, Dodgers and Padres, watching Rich Hill. I like Rich Hill, mastermind, 43 years old, oldest in the game. 3-2 to Freeman, and it looked like strike three. I mean, it looked like it caught the corner. A lot of, you know, the reporters thought it would caught the corner. He just didn't get the strike. And I believe he walked. And the next guy, and that would have been two out, that would have been three outs right there. The next guy came up, I think he hit a three-run homer or something or whatever, changed the whole complexion of the game with that strike. Disheartening. I know, sometimes it works with you, sometimes it works against you. But, man, oh, man, it just seems like there's been so many missed strikes these days in baseball when the pitcher, you know, gets that pitch over and not getting that out. Go into the next inning, it keeps the inning going, prolongs the inning, and then here we go, 4 or 5 runs score because of that one strike. That's got to be disheartening. And has that happened to you in many times? And you're saying to yourself, oh, my gosh, what was that umpire doing? I mean, it comes with the territory, I understand, but wow.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you work your butt off all your career, and you get in the bullpen and you're throwing and trying to work on things, and you finally get it fine-tuned to being the best you've ever been, and you throw that pitch in a crucial situation, and bam, you hit the corner right where you want to hit it, down low in the zone, and they just ball four. And you just it's really disheartening. But with that said, even me being a pitcher, you know what? I think the umpires, besides a few of the very obvious ones out there, I think the umpires have gotten a lot better with the calls. You know, they're going to miss some on the outer corner, always are, especially to a left-hander because they don't see them as much. And that's usually when you see those calls, is because the umpire, just like a left-handed hitter, you know, facing a left-handed pitcher, it's hard to call that outside pitch because they don't see it as much as they do with the right-handed hitters, you know, and that's when you see it more and more. So when you say Freeman, that's the reason it happens, because the left-handed hitter's up. And it's one of those things where they need to practice it more. They really, really do. And one of the ways I think they could do this is I'm not very keen on getting the robot umpire back there, but the challenge, I don't see a problem with having a challenge every at bat, just one challenge. You know, if the hitter says, nope, I want to challenge that pitch, or the pitcher wants to say, I want to challenge that pitch, why not? Give it a shot. It's not going to slow the game down much, and you're going to get right. But I just don't like it for every pitch, because I'm a traditionalist, an old school guy. But I mean, I even said a long, long time ago, it'd be pretty easy to implement in baseball if they wanted to do it. But there's just so many flaws, you know, over the course of the season with the electronics. So, but it is so disheartening, Mark, when you do throw that pitch and in a crucial situation, next thing you know, you got four runs on the board that shouldn't have been there or probably should have
exactly.
Been there.
You're absolutely right. And then you get these catchers that'll pull a ball inside the strike zone, and all of a sudden the strike goes up. I think that'll be the next thing that gets changed in baseball, I think, because now the umpire is totally confused. You know, you're calling that a strike when you saw the catcher just actually pull that thing right in. It wasn't even in the corner. Didn't even catch the corner. So I think that'll be another one they'll try to work on. The catcher blocking the plate or can't block the plate or can't have his leg, that was reversed on Sunday too. That was another one where it opened the door for the Dodgers to score some runs with Sanchez supposedly blocking the plate. But you look at some of the rules, and it's almost like they want more offense more so than pitching prowess, if you ask me.
Oh, they're definitely looking for more offense. That's what everything is all about now, is getting more offense on the board. I mean, that's pretty obvious to what they're doing, you know, with the bigger bases and only being able to throw over a couple times and not blocking the base and having to slide directly into the base instead of, you know, taking the guy out at second or third base or wherever it's coming from. But the funny thing is, Mark, if you look at all-time baseball runs scored every year, it's not changing much. It really isn't changing much. I've looked at it several times, and you know, besides the steroid era, the runs, they're still staying about the same, regardless of
right.
what rules are implemented. So I don't understand the rule changes. I really don't. I mean, I understand that I do get, you know, a guy got hurt at the home plate, you know, Buster Posey, and that's why they changed the rule. But, you know, people get hurt all over the game in all kinds of sports, and you just got to go with the flow and say, hey, you know what? It wasn't a good block. Buster Posey broke his leg because he didn't get in the position what he was taught to get into, and that's why it happened. And not being able to take a guy out at second base, it's really crazy to me to see how many double plays now, easy these guys are turning double plays now, because you just can't slide anywhere but into that bag. And so it's a tough pill for me to swallow, because I grew up loving to play that way, you know, taking
right.
the runner out, taking the shortstop or second baseman out at second base and playing hard and sliding home, you know, head or into the catcher, you know, Norm Charlton into Mike Socia, you know, that's fun. And for some of these fans to say, well, you know, we don't want to see guys get hurt and this and that. They're only getting hurt because they weren't in a baseball position, and that's what most of the fans don't understand. If you play the game the way you're supposed to play it and been taught, you know, when you try to take out a second or shortstop at second base, if the shortstop second baseman do what they're supposed to do, they're not going to get hurt, you know. But they've taken that out of the game now, so it just turned into a real soft game, in my opinion, is what's happening.
No doubt about it. And, you know, when you make it to the big leagues, you trust your ability. How do you sustain that when you've been in there for so long? I mean, do you ever second-guess yourself, or you just say, hey, listen, I'm trusting what got me here. I know I'm going to have some rough outings. I know I'm going to have some good outings. I'm going to study the tapes on what got me through the good ones, and I'll study the tapes that got me through the bad ones. But I'm never going to second guess myself because I know what got me here. Trust in your ability. That's a good one to break down, my friend.
Oh, hell yeah! You question your ability a lot of times when you're going through slumps. There's no question about it. You're looking for something or anything because it's just the way it is. I mean, you start giving up runs. You can't get somebody out. And it just starts happening, and it's not always just you know, like a pitcher giving up lasers to the wall. is just, you know, ground balls are sneaking through the infield. You know, they're getting Texas leaguers over the second baseman. It's just everything at once seems to just go wrong. But you just got to pull through it and get in that bullpen and throw and figure something out and change something up just to change up your luck a little bit. I don't believe in luck, but there's times when you've got to just change something to make sure or try to get things to change up. Hitters, man, it's crazy watching some hitters sometimes go through slumps because, you know, they take like an 0 for 10 or an 0 for 12 or an 0 for 15 or 20, and next thing you know, they're doing anything and everything. I mean, they're changing their routines. Just everything is changing. They're working. They come to the ballpark earlier. They come to the ballpark later. You know, they try to go to a different movie or anything. It's just it's funny, and they talk to everybody, so they're trying to find out if anybody can see anything different with them. So it's a crazy thing, but yeah, you question your ability quite a bit, no matter what level you're at, if you're going bad.
Well, I'll tell you, just to let the listeners know, next week we're going to be talking about shortstops and superstitions. Tonight's topic, we'll be talking to the best third baseman you've seen, Kip. I'll throw mine in there, and then we'll get into the worst uniforms that you've ever seen, too.
Yeah.
Hey, best third baseman, give me your top five. You know, no particular order, just your top five.
Well, I'm pretty biased with this one because growing up, my idol was George Brett, and so I've got to go with George Brett first. Brooks Robinson, Mike Schmidt, Chipper Jones, man, Adrian Beltre. He kind of changed the way third baseman play the game a little bit, but for third baseman, you know, I've always been a huge fan of catchers and third baseman because they are abused.
Yeah,
to put it mildly, they're abused because, you know, they call it the hot corner for a reason, and for these guys to make these plays like they do at third base, it's so simple for them, and it just comes down. I mean, I played with Caminiti for a little bit in Houston,
yeah,
and to watch man at third base, I mean, he was just like a cat, and God rest his soul, but my God, it was just so fun to watch a guy like that sit over there. And you know, then you got to get up in certain situations, you get it closer to the hitter, and then you're in a bunt situation, they got to go bust their ass in all the way in. It's like, oh my God, you know. But there's just, you got to have no, I mean, the guts of unbelievable guts to be a third baseman. I really believe that, but there have been a lot of really good third basemen over the year. And so, yeah, I'd have to go with those five right there if I'm going to go with
I'm going to jump in on those, and they haven't really replaced Schmidt in Philadelphia, but I'm going to add Bill Madlock to the mix. I love his style in Pittsburgh, with San Francisco, with Chicago, but he really found himself in Pittsburgh. He could actually, man, hit, and it was unbelievable. Talking about Ken Caminiti, covered him for 3 years in San Diego. I remember the game in Mexico when he was on the IVs and eating Snicker bars. He won the MVP that year, 1996, I believe. And, man, oh, man, he was just stellar. What a third baseman. You can even add maybe a Doug DeCinci in there. Doug DeCinci was a good one. I mean, there's just so many guys. You played with Chris Sabo, I believe. Pete Rose, third base. I mean, there's just so many great guys at that hot corner. And, yeah, you can't and you know, you look at some of these cities, Kip, and they haven't really replaced guys decades later. Like I said, Mike Schmidt, decades later. I know Scott Rolen got, you know, in the Hall of Fame and everything, but Mike Schmidt to me was Mr. Philadelphia out there, you know, at third base. I mean, he was just locked down. And, you know, you look at some of these other cities where they haven't really, you know, locked it down too. You know, Ron San Adrian Beltre in L.A., you know, you go around the boards, Ken Caminiti, you bring up an interesting one there. But when you look at some of these other cities, I mean, it's like they're still trying to find that third baseman that they haven't really replaced.
Yeah, you're right. That's what I'm saying. It's such a tough position, like a catcher's position. You know, when you lose a catcher that's top-notch, I mean, just look at St. Louis this year. I've never said that he's the greatest catcher that ever lived, but when he left this year, and I think that's the reason why St. Louis just can't get it going this year, because when you lose a top-notch catcher like that, in the game, it's just one of those things. And third baseman is the same way. You know, you lose a Mike Schmidt, and who's going to replace the guy? You know, it's just not going to happen. And that's the reason Bob Boone became a catcher in the first place, was because Schmidt was a third baseman there, so they decided to move Boone to start catching. Boone never even caught till he got to AAA because of Mike Schmidt. And that's, people don't know that story, but then Boone turned out to be one of the best catchers that ever lived as far as behind the plate. But yeah, there's just so many. It's just a tough position. I played with Tim Wallach in LA, and it was so much. It's just, for me, it's fun to watch those two positions, because the way they handle themselves and catch balls and line drives and one hoppers and never ever waver as far as, like, you know, their eyes get bigger or anything. So you have to be a special person to play that third base position. And I got a quick little story about, I was with Cincinnati in 91, and we're up playing the Expos in Montreal, and we're down like 6 runs, but we're making a big comeback in the ninth inning. And there's nobody out, and we've scored like 4 straight runs, and now we got a runner at first and second. So we got a chance to win the game. Next thing you know, an absolute laser line drive. One hopper was hit to Tim Wallach's right side. He stepped on the bag, threw to second, threw to first for a triple play to end the game. And today I still look at that like, how did that happen? You know, but a good third baseman, that's never going to happen, because so many guys, you take an A-Rod. He went from shortstop to third base because obviously the captain wasn't going to move from a shortstop position. But those guys, just they're special, special talent to play that third base. And I actually look at them more as I do as a shortstop. And usually your shortstop is the best athlete on the team. But to me, it takes a special, special person to move over to that hot corner third base.
Exactly, too. You know, you got to pick that thing up on, you know, bullets. It's almost like playing goalie in hockey. And those 4 cities that you've been through, I'm still trying to get off my bucket list. Montreal, Chicago, Milwaukee, St. Louis. You know, great baseball towns, great hockey towns when you look at it. And, boy, Montreal, it's sad, you know, with baseball being left out of that city for a while. But worst uniforms, as we wind this thing down, everybody keeps talking about the Tequila Sunrise. Houston Astros, I go, no. You got to look at some of these City Connects. And I'll let you go first on it, but the worst uniforms you've seen and you want no part of, and then I'll throw my 5 in there.
Well, the number one worst uniform is the San Diego Padres, whatever that thing is they're wearing right now. What colors those are. And I honestly thought it was a joke when I first saw them. I had to actually ask somebody. I said, is this really their uniform, or is this just like some day they had to wear this thing for some religion or something? I had no idea. City colors. I mean, they're just god awful. That's just god awful. Back when you had the White Sox, they didn't have pants. They had shorts on.
Yeah, I remember those days.
Yeah. And I got to go to your Pittsburgh Pirates, man, when they had the round hats up there. That was kind of funny to watch. And they were given the stars on the hats for everything they did. So it was, you know, I can't say I didn't really like it, but they were different. Let's just put it that way. But the most part, you know, most teams have good uniforms. I mean, Yankees, Red Sox, the traditional. I mean, but bad uniforms are the ones, I believe, or they just keep trying to change them up. And to me, I just like a plain uniform. Not much going on there. And so the teams that like the San Diego Padres, what that is, I don't know, and I don't care to know. But it seems like every time I turn them on TV, they're wearing them. So maybe it's psyching out the other team, but definitely not getting them too many wins.
Yeah, you definitely need shades for that one. And yeah, there's some other teams in there too. Arizona has that gray one with the, you know, I'm trying to figure, the Atlanta went with kind of a little bit of their 80s and in their 70s look on their hats. I thought they'd go more with the Hank Aaron thing. The Orioles, I can't quite figure out. If you're going to do a uniform, go with orange and black. They went with white and black. Couldn't figure that whole thing out. That's the fourth one. And the fifth one would have to be those White Sox ones of the heyday, too. But I will tell you this, and I didn't know it till the other day. A guy brought it up to me. In 76, there were four teams that wore the pillbox hats, the Pirates, the Phillies, the Cardinals, and the Mets, and somebody was saying there's a fifth one, and I thought it was Montreal, but it was the Cincinnati Reds, believe it or not. And
oh, wow.
Now, to try to find that pillbox Philly hat, that was going for sale for $150, if you can imagine that. So that nostalgia stuff is just, you know, kind of coming back in the realm of things. And I can remember your Reds, the hometown Reds with the Foster era and all that, with the home, you know, the whites and stuff. Boy, what a nice traditional one that was, too, and playing for that ball club. I would imagine that was really special to get out there and play for that city, my friend.
Yeah, it was. I'm more of a traditionalist when it comes to uniforms. I really don't even pay attention to most people's uniforms because to me it's just something your team has to wear and you put them on. But it's so funny when you see this Padre thing come up and the White Sox. White Sox had the collars on and all that.
You might have to play the song "Blinded by a Light." But remember, that was something. Man, we've come 30 minutes goes by quick, my brother. Every Tuesday we have so much fun doing this, and we keep coming up with new things to talk about. That's what makes it so interesting with the listeners that listen to us and get this thing out there. And you don't hear a lot of this kind of stuff. You don't see a lot of this stuff. We're a unique crowd, my friend. And as we wind this thing up, let everybody know how they can get a hold of you and the website and everything, and I can't wait next week. Superstitions and shortstops, staying on the S's.
Yeah, that'll be fun. That'll be fun to do next week. Yeah, kipgross.com, and my email address is beagamer@gmail.com, beagamer@gmail.com, and shoot me a message, questions, whatever you want, and I'll be sure and answer everything. And it's been a great day again.
Oh, it is, and I can't wait. We'll start wheeling some more players in here. I know some guys want to get in here, so we'll get some of those guys in here so we can mix it up with the listeners and stuff. For Kip Gross in beautiful Newport Beach, I'm in the other side in the San Fernando Valley. Catch the archive version if you happen to miss it. Let all your friends know. blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports. Podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts. Powered now by Mancini Media. We'll see you next week, same time, same channel. Have a blessed one. Thanks for tuning in. Kip, I love you, brother. Have a good one.
You too. Have a great day, guys, everybody. See you next week.